5
4
3 2
1 And welcome to Tech Talk, where you are welcome whether you love technology or you're just doing a bit of browsing first to see if it's for you. A bit like what our Sean does. Speaking of which, Sean Preece is here. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen Scott.
Julie Roddery is also with us. Hi, Julie.
Hi, glad to be back.
Now, 1 week on from learning the news that Amazon have added audio description to their service, we discuss what our initial thoughts are of it with Tim Schwartz. He's host of the Life After Blindness podcast and an avid tech user. He joins us from Cincinnati today.
And I'll be finding out another way of reading newspapers and magazines thanks to Dolphin.
And keeping in the Amazon audio description theme, we'll be hearing from listener Paul Porter and finding out just what he thinks of the new service.
And we've also got more of your lovely emails to read through. Sean and Julie and I will be emptying our big mailbag out and sifting through what you've sent this week. So yes, here we are once again, and you join us at a point of the year where it is actually quite warm in the UK. I don't know about you guys, I am absolutely boiling.
Oh, it's hot.
Isn't it?
I can't cope with it. I mean, we're in the 80s here. I mean, that's unheard of. My pasty, pale, flabby body just doesn't know how to react. I can't do anything.
Wow, what a horrible image. Thank you for that. You know, there are times when I'm my sight loss is not a bad thing, and this is one of them. It is roasting. And, you know, we're sitting here in a little studio. I've got a lovely new Apple 27-inch LED cinema display in front of me, which is absolutely gorgeous, but it is giving me a suntan today. I love it, but that's the one problem with it. Yes, but aside the heat, we will continue on regardless, guys, because we are professionals.
Correct.
At least that's what it says on the piece of paper that we all signed. We have got lots to talk about this week, in particular Amazon. Now, last week we brought you the breaking news, and it was big news, that Amazon have finally, at long last, added audio description to some, not all, but some of their services, some of their programs, I should say, via their streaming service, Amazon Prime Video. Sean, who are we going to be talking to about this week?
Well, this week we're going to talk to Tim Schwartz from the Life After Blindness podcast. I saw quite a few social media posts from him. He was really enthusiastic about it, so I thought he's the ideal guy to talk to. Thanks for joining us, Tim. Now, I've seen a few of your tweets and Facebook posts about Amazon audio description, so you've obviously been trying it. What do you think?
Well, thank you for having me, Sean. You know what? So far, so good, quite honestly, with Amazon's video audio description in Prime Video. I've really enjoyed it. It's accessible and quite easy to use, actually.
So what have you tried it on? I mean, what devices have you actually got?
The only device I've used it on so far is my iPhone 7. I'm using the newest version, 10.3.3, I believe it is the iOS version, and just using the app on that iPhone. And like I said, I've used it with a couple different shows that are described, and then gone to other shows that aren't described and come back again, and the setting remains the same. And like I said, so far, so good.
Hey, Tim, Stephen here. So I'm completely confused by this. I mean, I'll be honest with you, right? I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I don't want to break that news. I'm sorry if you're shocked by this. But I'm not the smartest guy. I cannot find audio description on any of the programs. I've tried The Man in the High Castle. I've tried Bosch. But I just can't find it. What am I doing wrong?
The unfortunate thing right now, like Netflix when they first launched audio description, it is only in specific shows at this point. Most of, if maybe not all of them, I'm not sure, of their original programming with Amazon is described. It seems like it goes back to multiple seasons. And then only certain movies are described. And the unfortunate thing with that is a majority of them that I have found so far, the movies are not part of your Prime membership. So you have to actually purchase the movie separately. But what I've found is that unlike Netflix and even iTunes, where you have your settings, your accessibility settings, where you turn on audio description in the settings area, and then Netflix picks that up and automatically describes, does not seem that Amazon is picking that that setting up by default. And so each show you go into, at least when you find one that you know is supposed to be described, you have to go into the audio and subtitles screen and turn audio description on. If you don't see it in there, then either A, it's just not described at this point, or B, what I have found talking to other people is, of course, do the old close the app out, close it out of App Switcher, maybe even restart your phone or device, go back in, and that does seem to take care of the problem with the audio description option not showing up in audio and captions.
I think that was a nice way of saying user error, Stephen.
I know what you're saying, Sean, right? I'm an idiot, and I get that. But here's the thing. There are other people out there who are not idiots, and you know, those people are, you know, just wanting to watch TV with audio description. And what Tim's talking about there, you know, it sounds, Tim, like it just seems very complicated. You know, Netflix, you know, you just turn on audio description, and let's be honest, it had a bit of a bumpy start, but it got there, and I'm sure Amazon will be the case as well. The problem with Amazon though is that there are so many different devices you can get the content on. You know, smart TVs, for example, or the Fire Stick. I mean, the Fire Stick's a great example, actually. I've got that. It's fully accessible through VoiceView software. When I go into a program, I can't even find an audio and subtitles menu using VoiceView because it's just not accessible yet. It's not really great, is it? I mean, they've got a bit of joining up to do.
Well, of course, it is early days. This just has come out in the last week or so. So, of course, there's going to be some things to iron out. That being said, in my opinion, for it being so early of days compared to what compared to what Netflix was in its early days, it's not too horrible. Like I said, once you find that audio and subtitles area and find that audio description selection, it then stays on with every audio described title that you go and play. It is unfortunate that Amazon isn't having the audio description on by default by recognizing that you have audio description flagged in your accessibility settings. I think that's the key. That's the key to making it not just accessible, but easier for the folks that you're talking about that say, well, you know, I'm going to try it once, maybe twice. If it doesn't work, I'm done. If it just would work out of the box like Netflix does with iTunes as well, where it recognizes that audio description flag and accessibility, that would make it so much nicer. And hopefully they'll eventually add that. I presume that that'll be something that they will add support for eventually. But right now, like I said, worst case scenario, you may have to just restart the app, maybe even restart your phone. And I did that once with one particular program, and it did end up showing up in the audio and captions area where it wasn't there when I went the first time. When I restarted everything, the description option was there the second time. So it might be some trial and error, but once it works, it does work. I think that's the other point I want to make is once you get it working, it works very well. It's very nicely done, and it is accessible once you got it going.
Ah, come on. I mean, Tim, you know, this is great. You sound so positive about all of this, but you know, if I was buying, say I bought a car and the wheels kept falling off, I'd think no. This isn't very good, is it? You know, this isn't ideal. And then you take it to the dealer and they say, well, you know, it's early days. We'll get it right eventually. We'll figure out how to make the wheels stay on. You'd be thinking, well, that's no good. And that's kind of where we are with things. Things just aren't working properly. I mean, like I say, going into a menu system, being unable to even find the audio and subtitles menu using the VoiceView software, you know, that's I don't know if it's laziness. I don't know if it's they just haven't thought this through, if they haven't done enough user testing. I don't know what it is, but why are these things just not right out of the box? I mean, it just seems ridiculous. Sean, back me up here. You agree with me on this, surely.
I must apologise, Tim, for I don't know what's the matter with Stephen today. He's so harsh. Of course not. Look, like Tim said, it's early days. Okay, that's not an excuse, but it is a reason. It's early days. When Netflix started, like we've already said, it was the same sort of thing. Some had it. One thing I want to double check with you, Tim, is you say that it does stay on. So say you go first time onto Amazon Video, you find the elusive audio and subtitles button, you double tap on that, or click on it, depending on what platform you're on, and you find the English audio described option, and turn that on. Now, once you do that once for one program, you shouldn't have to do that again. That should persist throughout every other program that has audio description.
That's been my experience. I actually tested that on purpose after talking to some people online and some blindness message boards who said that they seem to have a problem with that sometimes with Netflix, where even though Netflix detects that audio description is flagged, and even though you might have it playing in one show, they may go to something that's not described and then come back to a described program and it turns off. And so I purposefully tested that with Amazon on my phone and it was fine. I played, I believe it was Mozart in the Jungle, played an episode of that and it was described. I went to a couple random movies, another random show that I knew would not have description. And then I went to a totally different program that was described, that I knew would be described, and the description played right away. So it did not have a problem going from one show to another, one movie to another, described or not. The description stayed on once I turned it on. So I did make sure to test that on purpose.
Just to clarify, though, what you're saying is that that was on your phone. So you did that on one device, whereas if you were to go to another device, say an iPad or an Android device, you would have to then go again and switch on audio description on that device. It doesn't cross devices.
I can't say yes or no to that because I haven't tested it on a Kindle yet. I wanted to test it on the Kindle and I haven't had a chance, unfortunately, yet to do that to see if it follows my profile. But I don't know. My guess is that you're probably right. It may not follow you, but I don't know if it's attached to your profile or if it's attached to that device. And so that's going to be obviously the question there to test. And that's something I want to mention that you talked about earlier, Stephen, that it could be device specific at this point. Your experience on an iPhone, because of how they've programmed it for the iPhone, might be different than the stick, might be different than a Kindle, just because Amazon's having to program this for every one of these devices. And so again, like Sean said, early days is not necessarily an excuse, but it is something to consider that they are programming this for many different devices, that it might just be a use case. It might not be user error, just use case between those different devices and finding it. Like I said, my personal experience on my phone was pretty smooth. Other than the one time I had to restart, I was actually very I felt very positive about the experience just based on what I did on my phone. I wouldn't necessarily maybe have that same experience on Kindle or stick if it's not programmed as nicely. But so far, the iPhone programming is pretty good.
I guess we'll find out, though, as more people try it, because I'm the same. I've only tried it using the app on my iPhone. So I haven't tried it on a website yet. I haven't tried it on, the Apple TV. When it does come to the Apple TV, I wonder how it works on that. So the early days reasoning, I suppose, would cover the different apps on different platforms. But another thing is, how easy is it to find? You know, that thing of finding a movie you want to watch, actually having to start it and then see if the audio description option is there, is, you know, it's a pain, it's frustrating. Is there an actual category for audio described content in the Amazon app?
Not that I have seen so far. What I've used personally is the ACB or Audio Description Project website, which I believe is audiodescriptionproject.org, maybe. I'm not sure. You guys can check me on that. But I've checked the Audio Description Project website, and they have a complete listing of all the shows with description. They say that they will update that, I believe, weekly as they find shows that are described. So that's what I've used so far, similar to how we did in the early days of Netflix, where they didn't have a category there either and just had to go check those kind of resources online. But to my knowledge, I've not found a category for audio description.
I'll tell you one thing that's good about the Amazon Fire Stick as well is that when you go into a program, it tells you if the program has subtitles before it starts, before you actually hit play. If they add audio description to that, some kind of banner that says audio description on it, then you would know that before you even start the program. I use that a lot on Sky Television in the UK because it has the little AD bug that's on the screen, so you can, if you can see it, which I can, or at least I'm aware of what it is. At least I think it says AD. but, you know, it seems to apply. It has that as well on the, as I say, on the audio, on, I think it also does that on iTunes as well. It says audio description in the subject as well. So, you know, there are other ways to find out. But you're right, Sean. I mean, it would be good to have a dedicated menu. Interestingly, though, we had an email about this, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Tim. We had an email on this a few weeks back saying, you know, one of the annoying things about having a menu system, an audio description menu, like the way they do in Netflix currently, where you have all the programs that have audio description listed, is that it doesn't separate that menu out into genres. It sort of suggests that if you're blind, you'll just watch anything because it's got AD on it. And while that's probably true, actually, you know, what I'm thinking is, wouldn't it be better to have some kind of genre-specific menu underneath audio description. What do you think of that, Tim?
I completely agree. I can understand in an early days, again, that phrase of saying, well, we only have 100 or 150 or 200 programs that have description, so we're just going to throw them in a list. But, you know, there does come a time when that list starts to become so big, we really do need to have it broken down. So I completely agree that at this point, especially on Netflix and even with Amazon so far, they're already at 125 programs, you know, between shows and movies that are described. I think that's a good enough number that they really could already be breaking them down in the category. So I completely agree with you. It'd be a lot easier to navigate that list if you had a category breakdown.
Yep, that's right. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's great that we've got that option there, having that category of audio described content. But just going through them all can be a bit of a chore. So it'd be nice if they did go that extra step and give you the chance to filter them down. But hey, who knows? You know, it may happen. If Netflix do it, you can bet the others will copy.
We do this all the time, don't we? It's like, you know, when Android brought out accessibility, it was like, be like Apple. And then, you know, now Amazon are doing audio description. It's like, be like Netflix. This is all we do. We just, you know, we sort of compare it to others. But, you know, we have to do that because we kind of want to say, look, this is obviously an example of it working well. You know, can you do the same on your platform? That's all we're looking for.
Well, we've done the same thing with the announcement of the HomePod, haven't we? Where we've all said, okay, this sounds great, but is it going to do what Echo does? You know, so it's the same discussion with these different types of technology and the way they implement it. It's like, okay, this sounds great, Apple, but is the quality really going to be as good as Sonos? Is it really going to react as good as Amazon Echo? You know, so we do that with a lot of different things.
Yeah, but I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm not saying, you know, do what Netflix have done, because
I am.
Netflix have fallen into the same sort of traps. You know, the general list of audio described content. The rolling out where they started with the Netflix originals first, which is what Amazon have done. The rollout, there's no specific, okay, it'll be available in the US on this date, it'll be available in the UK at this date. You know, it's at the moment, we're just saying, well, try it and see if it's there.
Yeah. But I think that's the other problem with Amazon as well. And Tim, you know, alluded to this earlier. You know, you have the menus where there's content, and again, going back to the Fire Stick, you know, the way it lays out the content, it's clearly labeled Prime content. So if you've got a Prime subscription to Amazon, you know you can watch that content. But then additionally, there are other material in there, other content on there that you can buy, which I must admit, it's a lot better than it used to be. That's one thing they've really improved upon. There was a time when it was very difficult to understand what was not free to watch, but what was part of your subscription to watch and what wasn't. I remember I was thinking, oh, fancy watching that, and then £20, please. What?
Yeah,
so, right. You know, that seems to have cleared itself up, but there's still a little bit of ambiguity in amongst all of that. And then, of course, you add audio description into the mix, and some of that content will have it, and some of the subscription stuff will have it, and it's very confusing. So, yeah, we do need it broken down to some degree. But, you know, let's not hammer Amazon too much for this. I certainly don't want to hammer them too much. I'm just glad they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amazon seemed to have, you know, really picked up on accessibility lately with, you know, how they're maturing Voice View and bringing it to other platforms as well. And now this seems like they're really making an effort.
And whether it's that they found that there is a market here for it, or they just find that, oh, well, we should be doing this, honestly, doesn't really matter. The fact that they're doing it is really what matters, and that we're able to utilize the better functionality with Voice View and now this audio description. And quite honestly, I hate to say the word again, but Netflix only did this just a short time ago. Amazon's just now following suit. Really, even other than iTunes, nobody else is doing this. You can't go to, say, HBO Go or any of those other similar apps and get audio description as of yet, not even for their original programming. So again, we're only talking about a couple of companies out of many more that could be doing this that aren't yet. So I'm hopeful, optimistic a little, that maybe this will start to roll downhill a little bit more, and other you know, companies, other movie channels and things will start to pick up on this and do it as well. I can only hope.
One of the things that I was giving Netflix high praise for when it brought out audio description was not just the fact that it did it, but that it seemed to really go all in with it, and it made really good attempts at audio description. I mean,
exactly.
The quality of audio description was pretty stunning, actually. You know, the detail, the level of information. I mean, I watched Making a Murderer, which was a very complicated and, you know, difficult series to watch, there's so much information on the screen to take in, and you had to take that information in. And they delivered it in such a concise and clear way that without being able to see the screen, I was able to fully understand what was going on. And I'm not entirely sure that companies in the UK are doing as good a job at that. I just wonder, from what you've heard from the audio description, maybe you haven't heard enough, but, you know, from your point of view, Tim, how is Amazon's AD? What do you think of the quality of it?
In the few shows that I've tried out so far, I've actually been very surprised at the quality, although, as I noted on Twitter to some people I was talking to about this, that the couple of shows that I listened to were described by WGBH, who has a long-standing history of doing good audio description. They know what they're doing. They've been doing this for a long time. I know other companies do audio description for Amazon, as well as Netflix. They have several different companies that do audio description, from what I have come to understand. And in the couple of shows that I listened to on Amazon, they were done well. They didn't step on dialogue in the shows. They made sure to talk in between things going on, in between action. I believe they didn't even duck the audio, which I know people have different opinions on that. I'm not a fan of ducking the audio of the program to put the description in. I don't mind it just being part of the show. I think sometimes when you duck the audio and bring it back up again, you might miss things. And so the couple of the programs I listened to, they didn't duck the audio. They didn't talk over dialogue. And so far, again, only the couple of things I've listened to were done very, very well. I was very happy with it.
There is an art to it, isn't there? You said there, Tim, about people stepping on dialogue. I watched a movie the other week, and that's exactly what happened. And it really took you out of it, you know, because he would say something and it would be while the actor was still speaking. You know, well, I don't know what he said. And it's really, when it's bad audio description, you really notice it. And when it's good, you don't. It is important.
Well, and a lot of times when they do step on the dialogue, if you listen to the end of the description, sometimes, or most of the time in my experience, there's still space that they could have said maybe a couple seconds later after the dialogue was over. Yeah. They didn't have to step on it. If you really listen to it and listen to the timing, they could have waited a couple more seconds and had been just fine. And so I don't know why they do that. I don't know why it lines up that way. But you're right. You can definitely tell the difference between good or maybe not so good audio description.
Okay, Tim, well, I think we're all agreed that generally it's a great thing. You know, we can't get enough audio description. And the old phrase, it's early days, keeps coming up. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But Tim, thank you so much for joining us. And if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
Probably the easiest way to get information about me is just go to lifeafterblindness.com. There you can get links to my podcast, Life After Blindness. You can also find my contact page there to look for me on Twitter and Facebook and find my email. So just go to lifeafterblindness.com.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
I appreciate it, Sean and Stephen. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. A great podcast, by the way. Do check that out. Our own Sean Preece sometimes turns up on it. What do you talk about?
Oh, you know me. I am an expert for hire, Stephen. Some people appreciate me, unlike others.
Rent-a-gob. Right, okay.
I do, you know. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Julie. I really like you,
Julie.
Right, moving on. Email time. Emails. We've got so many emails. Let's get through them. Kit Pym has been in touch. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, you put so much effort in. Now, Kit asks this week, did you hear the item on The Economist's Babbage podcast this week about a different kind of mobility aid for blind people? Well, The Economist has very kindly allowed us to play the clip for you so we can all hear it. Let's have a listen.
For the visually impaired, one of the most useful tools while on the move is the walking cane. But this essential piece of hardware could be reaching the end of the road, as new technologies offer potentially greater assistance to those who need it. Matt Kaplan, our science correspondent, joins me now on the line to tell us more. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Ken. How's it going?
It's going very well. The cane, the white painted walking cane that visually impaired people use, it's been around for a while. What is the upgrade?
The notion was, if you use a cane and you're trying to find something in a crowded room, the cane will get you to the said object. So a classic problem that students run into who are visually impaired is finding an empty seat in a lecture theater. So the team at MIT who got involved with this said, well, wait a minute, could we set up a camera that could analyze objects in a space and scan them and then send some sort of a signal to the user to say, there's an empty seat?
Fascinating. So what sort of signal do they send?
That's one of the key problems that a lot of past technology has had for visually impaired people, because the initial idea would be, well, send some sort of auditory signal. But if you're visually impaired, then your sense of hearing is pretty integral and you don't want some newfangled gadget messing with it. So this team said, well, why don't we try using vibrations across a bit of the body that really isn't involved with navigation, the abdomen. And so they created a belt with vibrating motors in it. And if, for example, the person wearing it was to walk towards a wall, the front vibrator in the center of their abdomen would begin to vibrate gently and then ramp up the vibrations as they approach the wall.
Wouldn't it be frustrating because every time you go to the refrigerator, it's going to be sort of signaling to you you're going to be heading towards a wall?
Yes, and that's where the new technology really takes off, because the users of this device have an interface with Braille characters on it that allows them to signal to the device what kind of mode they want it to be in. So if the person is walking down a hallway and would rather not bump into walls, they can set the system to be in wayfinding mode. I am walking down a hallway. Please buzz if I get close to a wall or a door frame. Similarly, they can switch a button that says, I want you to be in chair finding mode now. And at that point, the device begins buzzing when it detects an empty chair. Similarly, if you didn't want the thing to buzz when you're near a fridge, then you could set it in that way too.
Now, Matt, what about the fact that when people suffer the loss of one sense, the other senses become so much more heightened that it allows them to compensate for it in certain ways, and hence the walking cane is used effectively by blind people that would be less effective by people who weren't blind and had to try to use it themselves. Is there a risk that if we adopt this technology to support people, that they'll lose their ability to use this heightened awareness of the other senses to support themselves?
That is a really good question. And being not visually impaired myself, it's a very difficult one for me to answer. With that said, the new system does not impair in any way someone's sense of hearing. And in fact, it goes out of the way to not even interfere with tactile senses on the face and the hands, because it's stuck under the shirt around the abdomen. So I don't think that such a sacrifice is being made, but it's going to need to be run past a lot of visually impaired people for that judgment to ultimately be made.
Okay, Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ken.
That clip provided kindly by The Economist for us here at Tech Talk. It's interesting, isn't it? This idea of this belt that you wear, the sensors on it give you information about what's on the floor, what's at head height, what's in front of you. Would you use that instead of a white cane?
I don't know. I'd have to use both, because while the belt would probably give you warnings about, you know, obstacles and stuff, you'd need to, you know, you'd still need to know, like, what was, you know, what street furniture was, the change of surface. That couldn't tell you that.
It's different for you, Julie, because you're a guide dog owner. So, you know, would you swap your guide dog for a vibrating belt?
No, absolutely not. No, you can't love a vibrating belt, can you? No.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, let's ask Sean that one.
I'm more interested in what sizes it comes in. I mean, I'm going to need a big belt if that's for me.
That's a big, big vibrating belt, yeah.
Look, it's all an aid and it's all an option, which is great. But I think getting that tactile feedback from using a cane, you know, I think it's really hard to get better than that. So, look, it's another aid. It's another option out there. Try it and see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but what if it breaks down on you and you really need it? I don't know.
And it's always, I think it's going to be one of those, until the technology is up there, you know, we're always going to have a white cane in our bag or a guide dog at our side. Just don't get them the wrong way around. Kit Pym, thank you so much for emailing that in, and thank you for sharing that podcast with us. That was really interesting. Georgina Joyce has been in touch. Hi, Georgina.
Hi.
Hi.
This is getting pathetic. Dear Tech Talk team, I thought the WWDC was really exciting this year, especially for the blind community. Of course, this is the Worldwide Developer Conference. We did a special on it recently. In maps, Jasuna says, mapping malls and airports, surely these are going to benefit us. It will eventually be rolled out to us here in the UK. Then there's putting paper documents into notes. By scanning our documents into notes, we can edit them. It looked like Apple were offering OCR. Furthermore, they're working on handwriting recognition. I am really excited to see how emerging technologies work for us. One concern I have is the Apple file system that could potentially affect VoiceOver. We know that VoiceOver on iOS does not have the functionality that the macOS has to offer. Let's hope that iOS has provided the functionality and Mac doesn't lose any of its keyboard and configuration functionality. Regards, Gina. That's really interesting. I didn't think about it in that way. But let's take it bit by bit. So yeah, maps, that sounds like an amazing thing. Being able to, you know, navigate indoors in big places, like, you know, going around a mall or a shopping centre, as we call it. You know, you go around those places and it's like, where is the shop I'm looking for? That's always a nightmare. Being able to navigate around there using your phone, that sounds incredible.
It does. It depends what the technology is, though. I'm still not entirely sure. Are we talking about beacons, in which case that hasn't been took up?
Yeah, it's these iBeacons, isn't it? We've talked about this for years. They've been installing them all over the place, but we haven't really seen any use for them yet.
They haven't made an impact at all. So, well, not for me, so I haven't noticed them anywhere. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a good thing, but it's so early with these that, you know, the rollout, it's hard for me to get excited about it because I can see it may be a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line before we actually see any practical use from that. But yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Julie, from your point of view, I mean, paper documents, putting them into notes, scanning them in, and that kind of OCR type technology, we're not sure if it is OCR, but that seems like a good function, doesn't it?
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I mean, anything that enables me to have access to the printed word is absolutely fantastic, yeah.
And one thing for me, which is handwriting recognition, I mean, to be honest, it would take a...
supercomputer.
Yeah, I mean, it would take quite a bit of work. It's hieroglyphics I tend to write in. And, you know, even a doctor will say, that handwriting is pretty bad. You know, so if an Apple Pencil can pick up what I'm writing, that is fantastic. But yeah, thanks for that, Gina. Some really interesting ideas. As for the comment about the Apple file system, Sean, I don't know how that works. Would Apple file system impact VoiceOver?
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to take the place, from what I can make out so far. I mean, it's early days with the beta as well, so it's hard to take any clues from that. But it iCloud Drive app is going to be replaced with the Files app.
Oh, right, okay.
So it should be just a case of swiping through as you normally do. The one thing I'm not entirely sure about is the dragging and dropping. I'm not sure how, I mean, obviously you can do that, but it's not very elegant with VoiceOver. So I don't know if there's going to be a way you can just maybe, you know, copy and paste instead of dragging and dropping. But yeah, I can't see why there should be any VoiceOver issues, but who knows?
Okay. Well, thank you for your email there, Gina. Simon Powell has been in touch from Newcastle. Hi, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Hello.
Hi, Steve and Sean. I was just listening. Oh, I didn't mention you, Julie. That's not very nice, is it? hi, Steve and Sean. I'm going to add it in. And Julie. I was just listening to your Apple WWDC program and found it very interesting. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You've got over it now. You've got away with it. To be honest, I can't see the point of the Apple HomePod, even though I know very little about it. That's the kind of opinion I like.
That sounds like me.
That's exactly what I say. I don't want it. I think it's rubbish. It's the most worst thing in the world, even though I know nothing about it. It costs, he says, $350. That works at roughly about £270. He says you can buy an Amazon Dot for £50, leaving you a £220 budget to connect any Bluetooth speaker you want, depending upon price or quality. So you can have the sound you want. Now, you also said that it's primarily aimed at music. So is this another way of getting iTunes subscriptions? I imagine it probably is. I assume when you say iTunes subscriptions, you might mean podcasts and content
Apple
that you've
music,
bought. And
I'm Apple assuming. Music,
yeah, yeah. All of that will go and work through it, of course. Simon, who clearly has a house full of kit, says that when I set up my Google Home, I noticed that it supports Google Music or Spotify, but not Amazon, even though they claim to have a library of over 40 million songs, which, if memory serves, is the largest library of its kind. What do you think? I think it's just there's so much competition in the world now with these devices, and Google is fighting with Amazon and Google will now be fighting with Apple over this. And the problem is that you get services on some and not all. So, you know, Google Home will do things that Amazon's Echo won't, and vice versa. And then the HomePod will do things that neither the other two do. It's just deciding what's best for you.
I believe the quality on the HomePod, though, is supposed to be fantastic. You know, audio quality is supposed to be really good. So let's see.
Yeah, but and it's interesting. Someone said to me this week, it's better than Sonos. Now, that is quite a claim. And if it's true, amazing. But I still think to myself, do I need it? Would I want it? I mean, I've got a lovely little Bose speaker. I've got a little SoundLink Mini 2.
Oh, they're beautiful, then.
Aren't they? I mean, this thing, if a burglar breaks into your house in the middle of the night, this will deck them in minutes. I mean, this is just, you know, you chuck it at something and whatever it hits...
I don't think that's how you use it, Stephen.
I'm not suggesting you use it that way. I'm just saying that if that happened, that would be the first thing I'd be reaching for. It is incredible. Or if you want to kill a fly, it would be brilliant to do that. And also to listen to music on, it's pretty good at that as well. But yeah, it has an incredible sound. It's got an incredible weight to it as well, hence my point.
Yes.
I think we're getting that. And, you know, as well as anything else, it just has that ability to give you really good bass without vibrating. A lot of these smaller speakers tend to have terrible bass.
Yeah, they rattle, don't they?
They rattle because they move. But this has such weight in it that it does allow for that. And it's got a nice rubber bass, so it stays. It's got a lovely little dock. And you're talking, what, 150 quid, I think, for one of them? Maybe 170, I can't remember.
I think I paid 170 for mine. Yeah.
I mean, brilliant, brilliant pieces of kit. And actually, the new one that's out, there's a newer one since the one I got, and that one actually speaks. It does talk.
I've got that one.
You've got that one.
Yeah.
And it talks, doesn't it? It says connected, it says...
yeah, it does. And you can even get the battery status as well, which is brilliant.
There you go. I mean, that's incredible. And that's just built into a speaker that's mainstream. Love it. Anyway, thank you for a great show.
We went off topic a little bit, I think.
But no, the point is, you know, the HomePod, as Simon is saying in his email, is brilliant, but... You know, you're going to spend about 270 quid. You know, if you had an Amazon Dot and you had one of those, you'd be, just under that. And you arguably might get more for your money. Again, it's the more for your money part depends on the services you want from the device.
I think I'd have to hear it to make any judgment. I'd have to hear it in a shop maybe or if a friend had one before I'd say yes or no.
If only they had invented some kind of store that they sold Apple products. If only that existed somewhere.
The reviews have come in and people that have listened to it have said, yeah, it's comparable or better than a Sonos. So that's a big claim. But the thing is, what Simon says there is absolutely right. You know, are we stuck in one ecosystem? That's really annoying. And plus, it's not able to do Bluetooth as far as I can find out as well. So you can't stream to it. So you've only got AirPlay and you've got Apple Music, no Pandora, no Spotify as far as I'm aware. So it really is stuck in that Apple ecosystem.
This is my point. It's not about the device anymore. It's about the services that it's capable of providing. You know, Amazon can provide... what is it, Spotify and its own Amazon collection. And that suits me because I only actually use the Amazon one. I used to pay for Spotify. I don't anymore. But, you know, Google Home does more than that. We are going to review Google Home here on the show in the next coming couple of weeks. So we'll find out what services it's got. But I just wonder, you know, if we don't want to look at the device anymore, I think. We need to look at the services because someone takes that home, thinks, oh, I've got a HomePod. It's lovely. It sounds amazing. But then you realise it doesn't do the things you want it to do. That's not great. Although if you're an iTunes person, if you've bought all your music through iTunes and you've got all your content in there, then it's perfect for you. You just got to think these things through a bit, I would think. Can I just say one thing about the Sonos, which really, really annoys me? I think Sonos have done a great job. I mean, the sound is incredible. The one thing I've found, though, is that everything has to be accessed through an app. Now, the app is accessible. They've done a good job with that. They've made improvements over the years, and so the app is accessible enough. That's fine. But it's the fact that everything you do has to go through it. So I'll give you an example. My Amazon Echo, I plugged into my Sonos, and I thought, that's it. I said it last week, I think, on the show. Oh, just buy a Sonos and buy an Amazon Echo and put it together, and life will be great. The problem is that the only way to get the sound out from the Amazon Echo from the Sonos is to go into the app and change the output to aux in. You have to go through the app to do that. It doesn't just automatically realize that it's there. So that means that, as my wife does, my wife unplugs everything every night. She always unplugs every single thing around the house, unplugging everything. And, you know, that's all fine. But then in the morning I get up and I put the Sonos on, I put the Amazon Echo on, and I try to use it, but it doesn't, it defaults back to being just the Sonos speaker. So I have to like, get my phone and change the app. And it just becomes a bit of a nuisance, actually. And that's the case with everything you do with Sonos. It has to go through the app. You can't just hit a switch or press something on the device. And that actually makes it a little bit prohibitive to use. I mean, there are other things coming out for it. I know there's, I saw something this week you can buy, which you can plug in and it gives you AirPlay and Bluetooth and all that. But, you know, I've just spent £450 on a speaker. I'm not spending any more money to get it to do what I want.
Oh, you are.
It's just crazy. Anyway, that rant over on that one. But, yeah, that's, again, it just comes down to, you know, we haven't really got a perfectly joined up solution. I mean, maybe now we will start to see Amazon and Google start to think about the sound quality in their devices. Maybe that'll be the next big thing. Who knows?
Well, of course, you've also got that all of these services are month by month. So you can subscribe to one month and leave it the next. Yeah. You know, there's no minimum contract, thankfully, yet. So, you know, you can switch between these pretty easily.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, Simon, thank you for your email. Really good. He says, thanks for a great show. And thank you for your email. Really appreciate it. This is Tech Talk. Let's get some news. Now, I thought we'd start off with something a little bit different because we often talk about driverless cars on the show and we have done, we haven't talked about it much in the past couple of weeks because there's been so much other stuff to talk about, but driverless cars are really just bubbling up at the moment. They are, it seems, going to become real. I mean, it's not a joke anymore. They're going to be on the roads. They're going to be here fairly soon, it seems, in the next 5-10 years. But what's interesting is around the world, they are trying out different modes of transport with driverless technology. Trains is one, and in one particular part of the world, they're looking at some kind of rail bus option. Alex Symington has a special report for us on driverless vehicles.
The London Underground Victoria Line opened back in 1967, and it was the first line operated with automatic train operations. Although a driver is present in the cabin, the train is considered driverless. Many lines now operate like that, with the aim of improving the frequency of services. Since then, ATO technology has been developed and enables trains to operate even more without a driver in the cab. The first fully automated driverless mass transit rail network is in Port Island Line in Kobe, Japan. The second in the world, and the first such driverless system in Europe, is the Lille Metro in northern France. Taking this idea one step further, China's latest mode of public transport is a bus, tram and train rolled into one. Like a train, its modular and carriages can be added on, but like a bus, it runs on the road. According to the manufacturer, the electric vehicle can travel up to 40 kilometres on a full charge, with a maximum speed of 70 kilometres per hour. It runs on rubber tyres and has sensors to read the dimensions of the road and plan its route. The idea is that the smart bus could travel without a driver or rails, and really just needs to follow white dotted lines on the road. It's like having a virtual rail for the bus. The 30-metre-long bus is able to fit 300 passengers across three different carriages. The smart bus, or Automated Rail Rapid Transit, ART for short, is touted to be much cheaper than subway or tram systems, since it doesn't require infrastructure to be laid down. This could prove to be the solution for many medium and small cities in China that can't afford to build train lines. It costs up to $102 million to build a kilometre of subway track, as compared to about $2 million for a standard length ART bus, according to a report by the Chinese state media. At 6.5 kilometres, ART Line will be built in the Chinese city of Zhuhai, with operations starting in 2018.
Interesting stuff. So there you go. You can get your rail bus anytime you like, and it's completely driverless. All controlled by dots on the road. That doesn't terrify me at all.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. That's the way all of this is going. Thanks, Alex, for that report. Our second news story today, which I wanted to bring up, This, again, is not something... This is what I love about the technology we're talking about these days. We're not talking about stuff that's built for us as blind people. This is stuff that's available to everybody. UView, which is a conglomerate of BBC, ITV, Channel 4 and Channel 5, have put together this box. Now, if you don't know what UView is, it's a box, a set-top box that you buy, and it's got all the Freeview channels on it. All the Freeview channels you can eat.
Food again.
It's always food with me. It's always food with me. But it's also got all the on-demand you can eat as well. So you've got BBC iPlayer, ITV, you've got Channel 4, 5, and I think they've added other functions to it as well. If you're on certain subscriptions through either BT or TalkTalk, you can get things like Netflix and you can get Sky channels, sports, all that kind of thing. So it's a great box. And it's not massively expensive to own. I mean, you can buy the box outright and you never have to pay for TV again, which is great. So, you know, it's good from a cost point of view. But one thing they're adding to it, and they're going to be rolling it out over the next couple of months after a lot of testing, I'm sure, is creating voice-controlled television through Amazon's Echo. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
So this is going to be the first time that, in the UK at least, this will be happening, focusing on voice control across a range of devices. UView are going to be one of the first developers to do this worldwide, by the way, with the new Alexa Video Skill API. Now, the APIs, Sean, tell us what an API is.
Oh, God, throw me under the bus there, Stephen.
Driverless bus.
Okay, API stands for Application Programming Interface. What it basically means is that it gives developers, anyone writing an app, or in this case an Amazon skill, an easy way to access information from a particular service. So instead of a developer having to write thousands of lines of code just to get what channel you're watching back from UView, they can simply send a request to the UView API saying, what channel is this person watching? And they'll get that information sent back to them. It just makes it easier for developers, no matter what device or app they're writing, to get information from and to a service, because the service provider has already created that code, the API. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, UView are going to be bringing this to its platform, and it's going to make it even easier for us to interact with their range of content all through voice, which sounds amazing. So, for example, if you wanted to sit down and watch EastEnders, you would just say, play EastEnders, and it'll appear. It'll play the most recent episode. That sounds like my kind of thing. What do you guys think?
It sounds really good.
Fantastic. But is the box itself accessible? Does it have text-to-speech?
No.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. And how do you get into the menus?
Are you guys insane?
Yeah, but look, this is an award-winning user interface that UView have got here. I just wish, you know, that text-to-speech was as part of the set-top box. It's so difficult now to get text-to-speech accessible interfaces. Look, this is all fantastic, but it all feels to me like a slight workaround, you know? The box itself, for me, that should where the work should start.
Yeah, well, okay, let me just, you know, clarify a few things here regarding UView. UView, in fairness to them, have done a huge amount of work with RNIB in particular. Now, I'm not saying it's all perfect, it's not, but, you know, they've done a huge amount of work to make their boxes as accessible as possible. What they've done is they've added magnification options inside the box, so you know you can actually get really up close to the information. Now, it's not perfect, as I say. They haven't added text-to-speech yet, but what they did do was make sure the app was fully accessible, so you got the same experience looking at the screen through your phone, and then you could, you know, find programs and record them and do all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, some people don't like that. Some people say the box itself should be accessible. You shouldn't need an extra smartphone to do it, or any smartphone, in fact. But that's just the way it goes, I think, sometimes with this. It's a bit of a challenge, isn't it? It's difficult to get the right answer that works for everybody. Some people prefer the smartphone option. I know I do. But it's up to individuals for choice on that one. But I think they've done a good job. This is interesting because this does make it easier. If you can control the menu through it as well, that would be amazing. I mean, effectively, that would make the whole box accessible via voice. And would that not be better?
I like the TVonix interface. I thought that was brilliant. That's such a pity that isn't made anymore.
Yeah, that was a great box.
It's just, look, I've been using the voice, the new voice platform for so long. It's hard to remember specific phrases. You know, how clever is this skill going to be? Look, like you said, it's good to have that accessible option there. If it is a smartphone app or it's an Amazon skill, that is great, and you know, and well done to them. But I feel that the set-top box is where it should actually start. So, look, it sounds like I'm being real harsh and down on it, and I don't mean to be, but I just feel that accessibility in the set-top box is the best place to start off, and then these extra options are, you know, are great afterwards.
I think I agree with Sean.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all, actually. I think you're right. I think it has to start at the beginning. But, you know, we have to start somewhere with these companies. And if they even understand accessibility, I mean, we kind of take it for granted, you know, with companies like Google and Apple really taking accessibility seriously. Microsoft as well. You know, they get it. They've built it into their products. They understand who the audience is, why it's there, why it's needed. But other companies aren't there yet, and they just don't see it as a major part of their workload yet. But that may change, and the fact that companies are even thinking about it is a good start. Although this, again, isn't something for us as blind people. This is something that's available to anybody who has, you know, a UV box and who wants to watch telly and you know, do the fancy stuff. It might seem like a gimmick to a lot of sighted people, but to us, it could be quite a difference between watching a program and not being able to watch a program.
Accidental accessibility, I think.
Yeah.
We're not going to knock it.
That's a great name for a radio show. Okay, so that's what we should have called this. Right, too late now. The third story I want to pick up on, just a brief mention of this. Dolphin have launched a free accessible reading app for those with dyslexia, low vision or blindness. This is interesting because we've got an app which is designed, as I say, for readers with dyslexia and visual impairments. Direct access to browse and download from your favourite library. For us, it would be RNIB Bookshare, but you can also get like the Project Gutenberg books as well on there. You can get RNIB talking newspapers and magazines, but you have to get subscription for that. If you're in the States, you can get NFB Newsline. You can also copy text from anywhere on your phone and hear EasyReader announce it. Read with your eyes and ears with perfectly synchronized text and audio. Play audiobooks or add a human sounding voice to text-only titles. Choose color, text size, and highlights to suit your visual needs. It's fully compatible with VoiceOver. You need a free Dolphin account for a lot of these things to work. That will also allow you to sync your books and settings across multiple devices. That sounds like an incredible app. It's free. It's fully accessible. I've downloaded it, and I've had a bit of difficulty trying to get my information on there, partly because I've lost my login information for my RNIB talking newspaper. Sorry. But I'll get there. It's in an email somewhere. I'll find it. Once I've got that, we'll be doing a bit of a review on it. It does sound like a really good app. I mean, certainly initially, I was really impressed by the layout. It's free. Download it and try it. If you've got an RNIB Bookshare subscription, or you've got an RNIB Talking Newspaper subscription, or you just want to try some of the free books, as I say, on Project Gutenberg, it's just worth a look. I'm sure more libraries will be added soon, but that seems like a really good app.
It does, and anything that's free is fantastic.
She stole my line.
I love free, my favourite price.
I'd love to hear from our listeners on that. Anyone who have used it, then you know, if they want to send in an email or even better, a piece of audio, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, you review it. Yeah, exactly. Throw it to them. That's what I say. Yeah, if you want to review it, go for it. That would be great, actually. It would be better to hear from you than me, let me tell you. Okay, let's now move back to our topic of the day, which we started with, and that was, of course, Amazon Television, Amazon TV, if you like, Amazon Prime content. It's difficult to know what it's called, because it's called different things wherever you go. It's Amazon Video, Amazon Prime, Amazon this. So anyway, it's video content on demand from Amazon, right?
okay.
Just saying. Paul Porter from RNIB has been listening to the show for a long time. He loves listening, and he got in touch this week to talk us through how we can now enjoy audio description on Amazon's original shows and some movies.
I absolutely love TV. As a totally blind TV watcher, for me, it's now got to the stage where if a film or drama isn't audio described, then there's no point in watching it, because TV is now very visual and you miss out on plot developments, visual scenes and so on. Audio description tells me what's going on and helps me understand the plot of the film or drama. I've been recently excited to try out the new Amazon audio description on their Amazon Prime Video service. Amazon have a number of TV shows and they have produced some of them now with audio description. There's only a small number, but hopefully that will increase. So Amazon is, I think, committed to accessibility, which is great. The actual viewing of the program is very simple. I've tried it on Apple iOS with an iPhone, and the Prime Video player is very accessible. You click on the show, you click on play, and then you click on the screen, and it brings up a series of controls which are very accessible, where you can move through the program, or you can turn on audio description or subtitles, etc. Some players are more difficult to use, but this is very accessible, so it's great that Amazon have taken accessibility seriously, and I will certainly be using Amazon Prime Video in the future. I absolutely love TV. As a totally blind TV watcher, for me, it's now got to the stage that if a film or drama isn't audio described, then there's no point in watching it, because TV is now very visual and you miss out on plot developments, visual scenes and so on. Audio description tells me what's going on and helps me understand the plot of the film or drama. I've been recently excited to try out the new Amazon audio description on their Amazon Prime Video service. Amazon have a number of TV shows and they have produced some of them now with audio description. There's only a small number, but hopefully that will increase. So Amazon is, I think, committed to accessibility, which is great. The actual viewing of the program is very simple. I've tried it on Apple iOS with an iPhone, and the Prime Video player is very accessible. You click on the show, you click on play, and then you click on the screen, and it brings up a series of controls which are very accessible, where you can move through the program, or you can turn on audio description or subtitles, etc. Some players are more difficult to use, but this is very accessible, so it's great that Amazon have taken accessibility seriously, and I will certainly be using Amazon Prime Video in the future.
Thanks to Paul Porter there for getting in touch and sending that in, telling us his thoughts on Amazon and their decision to add AD. Tell us your thoughts. Our email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. Right, that is it for our show this week. Before we go, though, Julie, you have an announcement.
I do. Well, listeners, you'll be without me for about 2 or 3 weeks, but never fear, I will be back. I'm training with a new dog, Coco. So I will be back, though, so never fear.
Don't leave me with him, Julie. Please, take me with you.
Well, I've got some features left for you to use, so you won't be completely without me.
Oh, she's like your mum. She always brings sandwiches, you know. I've left you a few sandwiches. I've wrapped them up for you. You'll be fine. Julie, have a great time with your dog Coco, and you know, all the best with the training.
Thank you.
It's like winning a lottery when you get a guide dog these days, because you wait so long for them. But it's so good to hear you getting your dog at last. So, yeah, good luck with
Enjoy.
That. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. That is it for Tech Talk this week. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Get in touch. Tell us your thoughts on technology. We'd love to hear them. It's your show as much as it's ours, so get in touch. Guys, until next time, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.